This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Before I turn to my special guest, I'd like to comment on a news report that you would have just heard, in which George W. Bush, President of the United States, was once again, for the umpteenth time, boasting of his great success in taking out Saddam Hussein. Now, there are several problems with this. He claims the world is better off, but most Iraqis think that's not the truth, that in fact it's quite the opposite. Tens of thousands drape themselves in Iraqi flags, march peacefully through the streets of two Shiite holy cities on Sunday to protest the United States occupation. There was a major article from the Associated Press about the corrupt new order where an ex-Iraq official rued the 4 years of war. Here are a couple of paragraphs from that. In rueful reflection on what might have been, an Iraqi government insider details in 500 pages the U.S. occupation's shocking mismanagement of his country. A performance so bad, he writes, that by 2007, Iraqis had turned their backs on their would-be liberators. The corroded and corrupt state of Saddam was replaced by the corroded, inefficient, incompetent, and corrupt state of the new order. Alawi concludes in The Occupation of Iraq, newly published by Yale University Press. Now, I have several points to make about this. One is that a number of experts had noticed, and I had written about, the Saddam on trial did not appear to be Saddam, but rather one of his doubles. This is the Saddam who was tried with great fanfare and hung, where practically all of the world saw him hung. There were a lot of suspicious aspects to this, but in particular, the jaw and the teeth did not appear to be those of Saddam Hussein. I wrote about it in an article you can find archived on assassinationscience.com. It wasn't my original observation, but I found a photograph from the United States government that confirmed the investigative reporter's discovery that the Saddam that was in custody was not the original Saddam. And now today I get further corroboration that that is the case from a woman whose son was ordered to assassinate Saddam Hussein on April 7, 2003. Before I give you more details about this, I'm checking with her to make sure that I have them right. But my impression is that Saddam was taken out in what I believe was an airstrike at the time where he was supposed to be dining with his two sons. These are the details I'm going to confirm. But this woman has written a screenplay about it, which he's had copywritten by the Library of Congress. I think it's going to be fascinating. She has quotes from the Vice President, the White House Chief of Staff, and former President George Herbert Walker Bush attesting to the successful mission to kill Saddam, the real Saddam, actually on April 7, 2003. Now, this is stunning stuff, but it's very consistent with a pattern of lies, deception, deceit, manipulation coming from this administration. George W. Bush has been beating this dead horse for too long. They've never told us the truth about Iraq from scratch. It's evident the plans to invade Iraq were formulated far in advance of 9/11, and that 9/11 was used as a pretext to justify the illegal and corrupt invasions of both Afghanistan and of Iraq. Afghanistan is a textbook case. Before 9/11, the administration held negotiations with the Taliban and told them that if they would allow a pipeline to be built across northern Afghanistan, they would be bathed in gold. If not, they would be bathed in bombs. They didn't. We did. Today that pipeline is going up across North Afghanistan. There are two huge permanent bases in the vicinity positioned perfectly to protect it. The president of Afghanistan is a former UNICAL oil official, and our ambassador to Afghanistan is another former UNICAL oil official. The situation is quite shocking. It's also evident that our intervention in Iraq had nothing to do with bringing freedom and democracy. You may remember way back when. It was supposed to be to cope with weapons of mass destruction. And when that turned out not to be the case, there were no nukes, there were no biological or chemical weapons, even though in the past we had provided them to Saddam. We had sold them. You may forget that famous photograph of Donald Rumsfeld extending his hand to Saddam Hussein with great glee, with great satisfaction in an earlier administration. it's really stunning and shocking to think back on the history of these events. Even Osama bin Laden was a creature of our own creation, intended to be an offsetting force during the Russian occupancy of Afghanistan. They drove out the Russians by using shoulder surface-to-air missiles to take out their helicopters, just as Hezbollah used anti-tank weapons to bring the mighty army of Israel grind to a halt in its latest intervention in Lebanon. Just as I would suggest the Iranians may perfectly well have enough shore-to-ship missiles to sink an awful lot of the American forces that are gathered there should the United States launch an attack on Iran. I'm hopeful that won't happen. But the Saddam case is just a perfect textbook illustration of lying to the American people over and over and over again. The Iraqis are saying the quality of their life was overwhelmingly better. Iraq was widely admired in the Middle East prior to this massive warfare and intervention against him, including the first Gulf War, for its education system, for its public health plan, for the basic civility of the society, apart from, of course, Saddam's occasional brutal murder of a member of the Iraqi community. Now, that unquestionably happened, but that does not mean that the quality of life or of society is now better after American destruction. Madeleine Albright even admitted that during the 10 years of interdiction and overflights in Iraq, some 500,000 Iraqi babies had lost their lives due to malnutrition and a lack of basic elements in their diet. And she was asked, was it worth the cost? And she assured the public, oh, yes, it was. Well, I can't imagine what would be worth the cost of 500,000 Iraqi babies, just as I can't imagine what's worth the cost of an estimated now 650,000-plus Iraqi civilians. For what? For oil? For oil? For oil? Are we going to get the truth from this administration? Never. We'll never get the truth from this administration, but what it cares about is oil. What it cares about right now is the privatization of the Iraqi oil fields. Iraq never had privatized oil fields. It's always been for the benefit of the public, for the Iraqi people, that it would use its oil. We're in there for three reasons. Oil is number one. Number two is Israel. Israel benefits from having a weakening of all the nations in the Middle East that would contest with it for political influence and power. That's a corrupt reason to be in Iraq, but it's a real reason we're in Iraq. And third, of course, is the outrageous plan to create an empire worldwide, an American empire, a string of bases around the world by this forward-leaning foreign policy, as Donald Rumsfeld used to put it, that was described by the Project for the New American Century. All these guys, Rumsfeld, Cheney, Donald Fife, Paul Wolfowitz, even Jeb Bush, Condoleezza Rice, came into government with a plan to create an American empire, but they needed a precipitating incident. They knew the American people would not favor wars of aggression or the fantastic financial sacrifice or the loss of the lives and blood of their sons and daughters, so many of whom are coming back maimed, if not dead. And now our National Guard is being sent over. More lies about a surge. Now they're increasing the number of troops. This is completely disgusting. This is completely corrupt. This man is the most incompetent, the most dishonorable, the most anti-democratic, the most un-American president in the United States history. We need to get rid of him and his running mate, Dick Cheney. They're a malevolent force in the world. They represent a cancer growing on America. A cancer must be excised. A cancer must be excised. The sooner the Congress faces its responsibility, the better for all Americans. When we get back, I'll introduce my special guest. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Where the boy wonder, Kevin Barrett, can be heard Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a woman who is in the center of a great deal of controversy by virtue of her extremely important work on the events of 9/11. She's a former professor of mechanical engineering who has degrees in civil engineering, engineering mechanics, and in materials engineering science. For those of you who may be unaware, engineering mechanics is applied physics. So if you're looking for a physicist who's an expert in all the areas that are requisite for actually being well positioned to understand what happened to the World Trade Center on 9/11, there is no one in the 9/11 research community better qualified than my guest today. It's a great pleasure to welcome again to the Dynamic Duo, Dr. Judy Wood. Judy, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I know you're feeling a little under the weather today, so I'm particularly pleased that you're able to come on. There's been so much excitement swirling around you and so many baseless attacks that it's stupefying, but I think that's the price you pay for being at the cutting edge of 9/11 research.
I think it's the price you pay for being correct. What better validation?
You know, that's a very unpopular thing. In the Bush administration and in the world today, I mean, anywhere in the United States, if you simply speak the truth, you're liable to be in big, big trouble. Amazing to me.
Right. If folks really thought what I was saying was nonsense, why would they pull out all the stops to attack me?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. If you or Morgan or I were deluded, it would seem to me it would be pointless to attack us. I mean, you know, just let us fumble along on our own. Why pay attention? And yet if you go out there today, you'll find hundreds, maybe approaching thousands of attacks on you and me and Morgan for one reason or another, Judy. And yeah, it's completely irresponsible. It's purely political. And in my opinion, obviously propagandistic.
Well, it's their job. You have to be understanding of these folks. It's their job. They're just fulfilling their job. Their job duties. One thing I found fascinating with these attacks is that they don't attack the ideas. They can't. They can't afford to because they would be confirming the ideas. They have to attack everything but the ideas or manipulate the ideas. For example, calling it space beams, you know, finding derogatory terms. The one that I like best is space beams knocking down the towers. What are Morgan and I known best for? The towers didn't fall down. They blew up. They went up.
The towers were pulverized. I mean, conventional explosives may have played a role, but it's obvious they can't explain everything that happened, not just to the towers, but also to the World Trade Center as a whole.
And neighboring things like the vehicles, the toasted cars.
That's right, 1,400 toasted cars, weird. You might have an engine block completely destroyed in the front half of the car, and the back half of the car looks brand new, and the gas tank isn't even exploded.
That is, I found, truly fascinating. Actually, the first vehicle I really looked at that had that, after I looked at several of them, this, you know, it clicked. You know, this was obviously a theme here. And that's where it finally came to mind that it had to be some sort of directed energy device.
Yes. And I notice you've been supplementing your website at drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com, with additional information about research in these areas. In the second appendix, for example, you have a report about multiple varieties of lasers and other directed energy weapons that have been developed during the course of the Star Wars research program.
Right, and that's old news. We've gotten some new news, but I haven't had time to post it. But that's old hat. That's some documents from like 1998, 1997, showing tests that they had done on these devices.
Well, I was always struck how you discovered that as long ago as 1991, a laser had been reflected off of a mirror on a satellite in space back down to hit its target on the Earth. That's a,
right.
And after that, a lot of that research became highly classified.
Well, they were worried about, that stuff that's become declassified because it's so well known in old hat. But the purpose for that test was they're worried about how it went through the atmosphere. And they found it was much less attenuated and distorted than they could even imagine. It well surpassed their requirements. So it was a very successful test. I thought that was interesting.
And, of course, the HART Project has been around a long time, and who knows for what purpose it may have been utilized. Reputedly, it can bring about earthquakes and can aggravate the weather, make a hurricane vastly stronger, do all kinds of feats of manipulation.
The one thing that scares me is how easy it is to do earthquakes. Yeah, there may be other things that are just as easy, but that strikes into my realm of expertise. Thermal expansion.
Yes.
If you could direct energy to any fault line, you have an earthquake. Because anyone who's had something stuck, like a jar lid stuck, you run under a faucet, get one side one temperature, another side another temperature, and it pops loose?
Yes.
Well, if you have a fault line and you heat one side, it's going to pop loose. So if you have an impending earthquake, you can decide just when you want to release it.
And that's very scary because, you know, you can't control the exact strength of the earthquake that would result from a deliberate intervention, which means it could be vastly more powerful than one might have intended. And,
correct.
I mean, to do these kinds of things, you know. It's so shocking the way these people are willing to manipulate the earth for their own political purposes, most of which I'm convinced are related to profit maximization by multinational corporations. But also, I have read too much not to suspect that some of it may be a deliberate plan to depopulate the earth. We have around 6 billion right now. The studies about the carrying capacity of the earth indicate that if you wanted to sustain the quality of life enjoyed by Americans, for example, that the earth could only indefinitely support about 2 billion at that quality of life. And I'm just worried that there are those who think that they are superior. You know, it's a mixture of arrogance and racism and a lot of self-satisfaction and lack of understanding of the nature of morality that might motivate some groups to believe that they have entitlements that the rest of the world doesn't enjoy in terms of even being entitled to a life of any quality at all. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. We'll be right back with my special guest today, Judy Wood. Today we're talking with my special guest, Judy Wood, who's been the center of, I'd have to say some kind of firestorm, Judy, that's related to major developments in relation to 9/11 research. In particular, a series of requests, which are technically known as requests for correction, have been submitted to the NIST under the Data Quality Act by Ed Haas, who edits and publishes the Muckraker Report, Morgan Reynolds, former chief economist in the Department of Labor in the George W. Bush administration, and Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson, which lay out evidence that the National Institute of Standards and Technology in its reports about 9/11 has failed to satisfy the government's own guideline regarding integrity and quality of research and so forth, that in some cases its evidence contradicts its own claims, in other cases it's ignored evidence, and a whole series of violations of Data Quality Act guidelines, which was put together formally by Jerry Liepart, a 9/11 activist attorney whom I greatly admired. It must be a pleasure working with Jerry Liepart, Judy.
Oh, very much. It's a privilege.
So that these are so significant that I authored a press release about them on behalf of scholars, which you can find on 911scholars.org. 911scholars.org. Go to the website and take a look, and you'll find that the lead article under featured articles.
It should forward to you the Jane Doe site.
Right.
On the news section. And the bottom of that yellow box, there's a diagram. If you click on it, you get a larger picture.
News section. I'm going there now. Bottom of the news section, yes. What, the bubbler?
Yep. That's what I call it. It looks like a drinking fountain or a bubbler.
That's right. That's what you have referred to it so many times. I've just opened it. It is an astonishing photograph.
How
truly astonishing.
How can this call this a collapse? I think any human being.
Well, I'd go further than that, Judy. I'd say how can that effect possibly be brought about by any combination of conventional explosives? I don't care how many tons of thermite or thermite you might have trucked in there. You couldn't get this effect.
But the bottom line, as far as what is on the books, NIST spent how many dollars, how much time and energy, how many subcontractors to come up with an explanation that this is a collapse?
Of course,
that tells you the
certainly
gravity of what we are dealing with.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so that the only sources of energy, the only causes that could have brought about this effect, if NIST is correct, is the combined influence of the aircraft impacts, the jet fuel-based fires, and then I pause because, you know, the temperatures, those fires don't burn hot enough or long enough to cause the steel to even weaken, much less melt. So there's no point of initiation of collapse. It seems to me so absurd that they talk about a probable initiation scenario, Judy, because they haven't got anywhere near one.
There's no way they could even model a collapse, quote, collapse, with any modeling whatsoever, no matter how hypothetical.
It's yeah, and I love this photograph impossible. Because, see, it seems to me its reach is far more profound because not only does it, provide a basis of refutation for NIST, but it seems to me it puts the lie to the efforts to explain what happened on 9/11 on the basis of conventional modes of demolition. I don't see any possible way that conventional explosives could possibly have brought about this effect.
If you have an infinite number of explosives on every single floor at an infinite number of elevations, but then you still have the problem with the toasted cars down the street a bit.
You'd still have the problem with the toasted cars.
How do you explain what happened to those vehicles?
And besides, infinite means literally unlimited, so of course, you know.
Every molecule seemed to turn into dust or disintegrate.
Yeah, how could anyone watch this, look at this one photograph and deny that the buildings were turned into dust, that there was a process of pulverization taking place that required some massive, massive quantity of energy that is utterly inexplicable, not only on the government's account, but on any conventional explosive account as well.
Correct, and they could have started out with some Hollywood fireworks to, you know, make people think that how it began was, a collapse or whatever. They had, a little skit going on for filming purposes, but when they get to this point that of this photo that we're looking at,
yes,
it's no doubt that the building up to this elevation, which is approximately even with the 47-story Building 7, has been completely turned to dust. Part of it's going up, part of it's going down.
It's a stunning photograph. And there's Building 7 just patiently waiting its turn.
Right, waiting its turn.
But not for nearly 7 hours later.
But you have to ask why, with all of these, quote, engineers thrown at the problem, do you come up with the conclusion that this is a collapse?
Well, you know, it's got to be embarrassing and humiliating for an awful lot of them. You have to assume that the only thing that keeps their mouths shut is that they're going to be fired, lose their jobs, and be unable to get another position, you know, because the government would blackball them. I just can't imagine any other way in which, these people could sleep. How can they sleep at night, Judy?
I really don't know. And that's what our last document was about. I should probably post that on the webpage. This recent letter that went out.
Yeah, I wanted to get there because there have been a couple of steps since you and Ed Haas and Morgan Reynolds made your submissions. And one is a subsequent letter that you posted with where Jerry submitted a memorandum related to some of the subcontractors for NIST on these projects. And the point you're making is that there's a massive conflict of interest here because, for example, this outfit called Applied Research Associates Incorporated, which was used as a firm offering advice, expert advice to NIST, turns out to be a significant manufacturer of directed energy weapons and or components thereof.
Correct.
That's quite shocking when, you know, if one of the necessary hypotheses that needs to be considered if you're going to have a serious scientific investigation is the possibility that some kind of high-tech directed energy weapons were involved here. If you have people on the inside who may very well, I would say, you know, given the way this government operates, had something to do with it.
Have the suspects investigate themselves?
That's right. Let the criminals investigate themselves. This is what George Bush likes. You know, that's his sense of justice. It's completely shocking. We'll return in just a moment with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is the leading technical expert on scientific issues related to the destruction of the World Trade Center, a former professor of mechanical engineering with degrees in civil engineering, engineering mechanics, and materials engineering science. It's a great pleasure to have on the show once again Professor Judy Wood.
Thanks.
And I think, Judy, your latest effort is particularly striking, which is a letter you have sent to a variety of experts in the area of directed energy weaponry. And as I understand it, and you can elaborate, you're pointing out that there is a vast amount of evidence, including the bubbler, that indicates that directed energy weapons may well have been involved here, and you're asking of them for their professional opinion as to whether or not that appears to be the case to them, given the evidence that you've displayed on your website.
Correct. And we are also hoping that by noting what we have noted in the letter, that folks will realize their rights. Whistleblowers have rights.
Whistleblowers are very unpopular in this administration, Judy. You know, they get, these are the people who get fired and demoted. It's not those who are incompetent or those who are dedicated Bush loyalists. I mean, look at Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. If there ever was a mediocrity in that position, it's that guy. And yet Bush is standing behind him, notwithstanding the dimensions of the scandal that is growing and growing like a snowball here related to these federal attorneys and the extent to which Bush has politicized the Department of Justice.
But I also worry about when you see other scandals brewing, perhaps they are a distraction of something else that's going on. That's what seems to be the theme. Whenever we see a scandal, we later learn what was actually going on at that time.
Yes. Yes. Do you have any thoughts about what could possibly be the case here?
We can always look at it. I know that they have seen these documents. They have acknowledged receipt of these documents. And
well,
it's interesting
maybe even to suppress attention from major developments in 9/11 research, such as the filings of these formal complaints, which have, of course, legal standing and to which the government is obligated to respond.
Correct. Now is when we find out if we still have a government that we can speak to.
I'm not at all sure we do, Judy, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
By the way, I've noticed a striking addition to your homepage is, Morgan has done so much work on the video record in which he's found so many anomalies related to the aircraft hitting the Twin Towers that it's been fascinating to me, and I have, of course, myself observed videos showing a cruise missile heading toward the towers, showing a hypersonic plane flashing by the South Tower, showing a plane coming toward the South Tower, and yet in another video taken from the same perspective at the same time, no plane visible. And here I see you've done something very good. You've put up a series of comparison images, and some of which you see planes and others not, where you see different features, and I think it's very clear from Morgan's work that there are problems with the video record. Now, they could have faked the videos, and there still have been planes that impacted the building, but the question becomes, if the planes did impact the building, why was it necessary to fake so many videos?
Correct. And as I have said from the beginning, that hole wasn't big enough for a Boeing 767 to get into it. And it doesn't matter if there was or wasn't planes after that point. The fact was, what they told us was not true. So why did they tell us that story?
You're talking about 767s at the World Trade Center? At
right.
The Twin Towers?
As well as, the hole for the
Pentagon.
Right, as well
as the
hole for
the 757 of the Pentagon. It's ridiculous. It's only about 10 feet high and 16 or 17 feet wide.
Right. So a 757 couldn't fit in that hole.
That's right. We're talking about an aircraft that weighs 100 tons, has a 125-foot wingspan, has a tail that stands 44 feet above the ground, and you have no wings. You have no crumbled-up fuselage. You don't have no seats, no bodies, no luggage. You don't even have the tail, one of the structurally strongest. They never even recovered the engines, Judy. Those Rolls-Royce engines, practically indestructible.
But, you know, when you get on an airplane, you see on the wing, if you've ever sat over the wing position,
sure.
There's writing on it, no step here.
Yes.
Delicate. How can it slice through steel columns? It just does not make sense. How can it, does it suddenly disintegrate? Well, then how they have bodies at the Pentagon. I mean, there's a lot of things that just don't add up. But the hole isn't big enough at the Pentagon for a 757. The hole in Pennsylvania isn't big enough for a 757.
And there, of course, it's supposed to have gone right down into an abandoned mine shaft. I mean, this is so stupid, I guess.
An open pit mine that was recently filled in with light, dirt.
It's completely ridiculous. So why didn't we have a massive excavation then to recover the parts of the plane and the passengers, the bodies? Who knows, maybe somebody was alive there. It's not as though we've never responded to some kind of catastrophe involving miners deep underground in mine shafts before.
Right, but the interesting thing is that all of these locations, the holes left were not big enough, and there were no plane parts that are identified as the correct plane parts. It is just that, you know, if there is a story, let's hear the correct story. But the story we were given has been proven false. Just like looking at the bubbler picture, there's no way that is a collapse. Please explain in your report. They don't explain, but they need to. We're the owners of this country. We need accountability.
Yes, it's often said that when the government fears the people, you have a democracy, and when the people fear the government, you have something else indeed, and I think there's not much doubt that we have something else indeed.
I'm trying to have as much courage as I can to stand up to it, to not fear my government. It's getting tricky.
And yes, a very small number of individuals involved here. You know, I have the sneaking feeling from, for example, this woman who was an assistant to Ashcroft. It turns out I was watching a report last night on NBC, how she came from Regis University that Pat Robertson founded, and it appears to be a very mediocre law school, although recently they have strengthened their standards. And they have something like 100 graduates have got into the Bush administration. And the fascinating feature, of course, is these are all extreme religious zealots. These are people who are religious fundamentalists. And I believe that Bush has been very cleverly stacking the Department of Justice and the government, and even, I think, picking his generals on the basis of whether or not they happen to be religious fundamentalists. There's not supposed to be a religious test for any of these positions, of course.
That's illegal and
unconstitutional, but I do believe he's been doing that he's been stacking the Department of Justice with right-wing evangelical fundamentalist Christians.
I don't see that as such an important issue. What I see as important is the oath of office. To swear to defend the Constitution, swear to defend the United States against all evils, foreign and domestic. And we as citizens, I don't know the status of our oath, but I know that if you are sworn in as a naturalized citizen, you take the citizenship oath. And that impressed me about Sybil Edmonds. I have a video of her on my webpage with that. Swearing to defend the U.S. against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we all should be doing that. And I think that's what matters, is we have a set of rules that we are to live by, and we should be doing that. And things should, who else is to check?
And those rules, of course, are rooted in the Constitution of the United States and its Bill of Rights. Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. Today, I'm prefacing my discussion with my special guest, Judy Wood, with some comments about the latest statements from the White House, where President Bush is claiming that he accomplished a great deal by getting rid of Saddam Hussein. And I'm suggesting to you that he got rid of Saddam Hussein a long time ago and that it has done massive destruction to the country of Iraq, including over some 650,000 of its civilians, which is completely outrageous. And over a long period of time, between the first Gulf War and the second, some 500,000 young Iraqi infants died from malnutrition and other sources. It's completely disgusting. We've destroyed their infrastructure, their society, and they're well protesting very appropriately that they want Americans out. What he's doing is sending more Americans in. And I'm suggesting, you know, that the Saddam who was hung recently with such great fanfare was not, in fact, Saddam Hussein. I published an article entitled, When is Saddam Not Saddam? On the 15th of July, 2004, that you can find on my website, Assassination Science. And now I'm hearing from a woman whose son was in the military that he actually succeeded in assassinating Saddam on April 7th, 2003. And I'm very confident that was in an airstrike when Saddam was dining with his two sons. But, of course, it's not convenient for the Bush administration to admit the truth about any of this. I'd like to encourage you and remind you that by special arrangement with Ted Anderson, who's the owner of the Genesis Communication Network, you can obtain copies of these, complimentary copies of articles of mine by phoning in to 1-800-360-8695. 1-800-360-8695. And if you go to assassinationscience.com, you'll find the article about when is Saddam not Saddam under the heading in the left-hand menu bar of the campaign. And if you go down further to under terrorism, you'll talk about the third article is entitled Eradicating Terrorism. Actually, the title is Killing Terrorists versus Eradicating Terrorism, which I had published already on 27 September 2001. 27 September 2001. That's in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. And I just like to say, we can kill all these terrorists, but that doesn't mean we're getting rid of terrorism. We're not eradicating terrorism thereby if, in fact, the processes that are going to produce more terrorists are operating like a conveyor belt. So I'd just like to encourage you to obtain copies of those two articles, which Genesis Communication Network will kindly send you complimentarily, no charge, if you call up that number, 1-800-360-8695. I might mention, by the way, that you can obtain a copy of a wonderful chapter by Judy Wood that appeared in a book I have edited and just published entitled The 9/11 Conspiracy. The 9/11 Conspiracy. You can find it in the major bookstores and online on Amazon.com at a very reasonable price. So I would say check that out. There's a wonderful chapter by Judy Wood. There are chapters by David Ray Griffin, Peter Dale Scott, by John McMurtry, by Jack White, a color photo section that's going to blow you away, including one of these spectacular photographs of the kind we're talking about here, the bubbler. So I want to encourage you to learn more about 9/11. Everything has changed because America has been turned into a dictatorship since 9/11. That's the way in which everything has changed. It's not that we have to have this endless war against terrorists, it's that terrorism is being used as a phony excuse to subvert the Constitution, to roll back the Bill of Rights, to strengthen the federal government, to place the population under surveillance. They're using computers that can perform a trillion operations a second. Think about it. When you have that kind of massive computing power, it's easy to put it at the disposal of evil men. The saying is that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think we're in that kind of situation today where there's a merger of big government with big business. We have a form of government that Mussolini described as corporatism. It's typified by militarism and nationalism and where the leader tends to be identified with the state so that any criticism of the leader is interpreted as unpatriotic or even treasonous. I think that we are still at that point in time, except most Americans now have had the scales ripped from their eyes, and they can see that Bush is a bumbling incompetent. It began with Katrina. Bush was terrible. The government was awful. We still have citizens of the United States, black and white, who are suffering miserable lives as a consequence of the failure of the federal government to respond in an adequate fashion to the disaster known as Hurricane Katrina, even when they had 5 days warning, 4 days warning, 3 days warning, 2 days warning, 1 day warning that it was coming, that it was coming. This is shocking. This is dismaying. This is a dereliction of duty of the highest order. And it's by individuals who don't care about the American people, who care about corporations. Mussolini also said this form of government was known by a different name, fascism. What we have seen since 9/11 is the emergence of American-style fascism. In his marvelous essay, John McMurtry explains how this is an almost inevitable working of a certain mode of economic organization, that there are powerful forces here in these multinational corporations that want to promote globalization. They want to promote the World Trade Organization. They want to have corporations running the world. And another dimension of this, my friends, is the North American Union, which is going to merge the United States with Canada and Mexico. It's going to make our national sovereignty virtually meaningless. It's going to allow, you know, Mexican workers to take jobs away from American workers, just as all these manufacturing jobs, for example, are being farmed out. They're being outsourced. Remember, that's a favorite word to Donald Rumsfeld and the New World Order, outsourcing. They're giving all the good jobs away to the rest of the world. They're trying to turn us into an impoverished third world nation. That's what's happening to the United States of America during the regime of George W. Bush. If there ever was a nation that stood in need of regime change, it is the United States of America today in 2007. I never believed in my life I would see the United States turn into an aggressive, bullying, arrogant, self-serving nation, but by God, that's what we have become. We have become that, and in the 6 short years that this man has been in office, our standing in the world has been transformed. We used to be the most admired and respected. Today we are, along with our ally in the Middle East, Israel, the most despised and reviled. The greatest source we had of our national security was our moral standing in the world. That has been squandered. There are 3 legs to national security: financial security, military strength, and moral standing. Financial security, do I need to tell you that we have the biggest deficits in American history? This guy keeps running it up, running it up, running it up. He used to attack the tax and spend Democrats. This guy is a charge and spend. This guy's just laying it off on our children, on our grandchildren, and our grandchildren's children. That's despicable, and that's the economic policy of George W. Bush. Military policy, all the generals, all the commanders of the National Guard are telling you our military are broken. These guys are going back for 3, 4, 5 units. That would drive anyone crazy. It would drive you insane, the emotional damage being done to those who return. If they're not missing arms and legs, they are mentally and emotionally bruised, damaged. Their lives are tattered and torn. And moral standing, absolutely a disgrace. Absolutely a disgrace. For this man to call himself the security president is a joke, a sick joke. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with my special guest today, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Dr. Judy Wood, who has degrees in civil engineering, engineering mechanics, materials engineering science, and who is, in my opinion, the single most qualified expert on the physical and scientific issues involved in the destruction of the World Trade Center. Those of you who heard my flagging of the Bush administration must realize that it was lies, deceit, and deception that got us to the point where we are in the world today. And the key to understanding what has been going on is to realize that 9/11 was a massive hoax perpetrated on the American people. The most reliable method for exposing that hoax is scientific research, which means that my guest today holds many of the keys to the kingdom. It's easy to lie. It can be very difficult to unpack a lie and explain why it's wrong, but Judy Wood has been making major contributions toward that end. Once again, Judy, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks.
Where would you like to go from here? You know, sometimes I think that it's so useful to treat this as though this were a class presentation as you're coming into the classroom and want to lay out some of the fundamentals for your students, you know. Maybe it would be useful to just fill in our audience as though it were a group of your students about what you think are some of the most important features of the devastation of the World Trade Center to pay attention to understand what really took place on 9/11.
Well, the most important thing I see is like the picture of the bubbler. And ask yourself, does that look like a collapse? There's a lot of questions, and I think the important thing is to think for ourselves. We can't, whenever we turn over our thinking to someone else, we're heading for trouble. So we need to keep thinking for ourselves independently, talking about various issues that we have questions about. Things that don't make sense. It doesn't take a physicist or a scientist to come up with the understanding that what we were told was not correct.
I think you're absolutely right in a gross way that it's not difficult to realize that something terribly wrong has taken place. For example, since the plane, assuming planes hit the towers, the plane in the North Tower hit on the 96th floor where the steel is thinner, the fires burned longer and were distributed more extensively around the floors and burned, it was not quite a half an hour before the South Tower would be hit. And only at the 80th floor where the fires were much more modest and the steel was thicker, which means that in principle the North Tower should have fallen before the South, and yet the South Tower fell after less than an hour of exposure to temperatures of only around 500 degrees. Steel is an excellent thermal conductor. The whole building, the rest of it, was stone-cold steel. It worked as an effective heat sink, which meant it would draw off all the heat from any particular location in the building. It's ridiculous. The government's whole official story is completely and totally ridiculous.
Jim, the towers did not fall.
Right. But on the official account, Judy, they say it fell. It's ridiculous to think the towers fell, which is the government has been telling us, and as you are emphasizing, as I frequently do, even with Stephen Jones, the towers didn't actually even fall, as the bubbler photograph reflects.
Right, and they didn't even have time to fall, theoretically.
And they didn't even have time to fall, theoretically. I think that's one of your most elegant contributions to the debate, to the discussion, to scientific research, is your demonstration with billiard balls of the temporal factor alone, that there wasn't enough time for the buildings to have collapsed, no matter what the point of initiation.
Even if the building suddenly turned into the jelly, jelly at least provides some sort of resistance.
Even jelly provides some sort of resistance.
Yeah, jelly would
turn down. 110 stories of jelly.
Right. How fast could you move through the jelly?
That's really good. That's really good, Judy. I think you have a gift for metaphors and similes. You really do.
You're talking about the steel weakening. Well,
yeah.
If you've ever seen a piece of metal weaken, it gets more it gets easier to bend.
Yeah.
And it gradually, the example I gave my class is you get a bunch of coat hangers, old metal ones.
Yeah.
Light them up and make sort of a grill to put over a fire because you want to heat some water. So you put a big pot of water on this grill made of wadded up old coat hangers.
Yes.
Start your fire, and then what happens? I give them a multiple choice answer. One, nothing. Two, the pot gradually starts lowering. Three, it suddenly, without any warning, the pieces of coat hanger fly out in the short little sticks in all directions.
Complete and total collapse.
And then another one is the coat hangers, without any notice, suddenly turn into dust, blow away, and the pot slams to the ground. I forgot to add another option, that the pot turns to dust along with the coat hangers.
That's nice.
And the water goes away.
That's very nice indeed.
It does not make sense. Whenever metal heats up, if it's too hot to hold whatever it's supposed to be supporting, it's going to start sagging. It's going to lower down. It's not going to shatter.
Well, if to buy into the government's account, you'd have to believe that every time you turn on your stove that your skillet is going to melt, or that when you do a barbecue, outside, your steaks are going to disappear into the flames, which are going to collapse to the ground.
Or when you turn on your kerosene heater.
Or you turn on your kerosene heater. Boy, that's going to be a scary experience, isn't it?
Right, because that's jet fuel. Kerosene is jet fuel. So what is that going to do?
Can anyone of any degree of competence whatsoever take seriously what the government has told us?
Only if they're not thinking. It's an IQ test for our nation.
It's an IQ test for our nation. And I just think, there's been this dumbing down of America. The influence of television, I'm afraid, has been very detrimental to the development of intellectual ability. People who read a lot have great advantages over those who don't on all kinds of grounds, but especially because they develop a stronger intellect. The kind of mental operation involved in reading is of a much higher order than the kind of mental operations involved in merely watching television.
Or those who are told one thing from somebody else and don't think of the answer for themselves. They just assume that whoever told them something, it must be true, and memorize it and go on. But one thing I would like to talk about today is the toasted car issue.
Yes.
There were approximately 1,400 toasted cars that they hauled away from Manhattan that day that were toasted in bizarre ways.
Yes.
And actually it was the toasted cars that really helped me home in on what could have done this. Before then, I could only eliminate various things.
We'll return to the toasted cars. Perhaps we want to visit your website again, Judy. My special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood. We're talking about scientific issues related to 9/11. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today we're discussing technical issues related to 9/11 with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood, who is the most qualified scientist investigating these events. Judy, we're talking about the toasted car phenomenon. You might want to review that for our audience.
Right. There's these various vehicles, some close to ground zero, some, you know, a few blocks away, some one block away, two blocks away, three blocks away, more blocks away. And when you look at them, you realize there's very little explanation that's plausible if you only consider fire, airplane fuel, explosives in the tower, and so forth.
Because, and, of course, the reason they're of interest to you is that they display all kinds of weird effects from what has to be some very powerful source of energy, where half of the vehicle is destroyed and the other half looks brand new, where some of them are crunched and mangled like a beer can after a fraternity party. There's a lot of weird stuff going on here.
Like a missing engine block.
Missing engine block, and yet the gas tank's unexploded.
Correct.
I mean, how can you account for that? And certainly the claim that thermite or thermate could have done all these things is turning thermite into a magic twanger that can perform miracles.
But how did thermite get a few blocks away?
And how did thermite get blocks away anyway? Aren't some of these cars as far away as the FDR Drive, about a mile or more away?
Right. And the opposition, you know, devil's advocate, says, oh, they were towed there. Well, they were towed there from, okay, let's you know, imagine that. That doesn't mean they weren't damaged. Look at the damage on them.
Right, I think that I agree with you, Judy. I think that towing issue is just a distraction, you know.
But it doesn't mean that they weren't damaged. If you use that as why, now it doesn't make much sense that they were towed, because there's cars near the WTC with a lot of empty parking areas that remained there for several weeks after 9/11.
You know, there's this. I can't recall which comedian did a bit about duct tape, how duct tape was the universal cure for household problems, and I now think thermite is supposed to be the universal cure to explain everything there is to explain about what happened at the World Trade Center.
But, for example, this parking lot that's got a bunch of toasted cars in it. You know, one car is toasted, the next one is not. Three cars over, another one's toasted, and so forth. It is like selected vehicles. Pockets of vehicles were toasted, but the most interesting part of this is that there's paper and grass and whatnot between those toasted cars and the WTC complex, as well as plenty of other vehicles in between, like fire trucks and so forth, that weren't toasted, that had other problems, but they weren't toasted. So if it's a big fireball, why did it jump over various cars and jump over all the paper and hit only certain vehicles? You know, kind of mind-boggling. And it's the engine blocks that really fascinate me, that the engine block is totally gone. There's several pictures. You can look up the wheel well and see daylight. There's no engine in there. But the back half of the car is fine.
And, of course, the paper, Judy, the all-pervasive presence of paper. I mean, you not only have the massive mountains of dust all over the place, but then you have paper that's not even singed.
Right. Very few pieces of paper I've seen have any signs of heat on them. And as well as there's plenty of dust. It looks like after a new snowfall in that area. But the paper got there when the towers blew up. So it wasn't like the paper arrived several days later. The paper is fairly dense compared to some of the dust as well. So it's interesting to look at what is where. And there's no solid steel pieces in that area.
No
so
what?
No solid steel on
no
the ground.
No solid steel.
Between the tower, where the tower had stood, or between Building 6, which you can see, and this parking lot full of toasted cars. So what got the cars on fire? And I don't think they would move there while they were on fire. That would be kind of silly.
No, and it looks to me as though the occupants of those vehicles were completely disintegrated in place, you know.
The ones that were found alongside the road.
Yes.
And the ones on FDR Drive, right, if they were toasted where they are, they would create a problem and, you know, they'd be blocking up the middle of the road. And it's reasonable they scoot them off to one side, and indeed you see marks on the pavement showing where they got scooted over. But if they restore them there, why didn't they store steel beams from the World Trade Center complex there? It's kind of bizarre. I think that is meant to be a distraction. Because if they're shipping them to Freshkills, the barges they're loading them onto are just a block north of that parking lot that remained, you know, uncluttered. It just had all the toasted cars sitting in it for a few weeks. You know, it was just right close to the WTC complex. So why would they haul them over to the middle of a busy highway, throw them in the middle of the highway, only to move them back, you know, later? It's a bit silly. But even if someone wants to think they were towed there, they're still damaged in weird ways. How did they get damaged like that?
Certainly, to my knowledge, no conventional explosive that could have done it, no conventional mode of demolition or whatever would have had that effect, which I presume is a good part of your point.
Right. Like there's a particular vehicle that has a patch on the back. It looks like a circular spot that's in pristine condition where all around that is toasted. That is weird. It's like something that has a focused dimensions to it. Something was blocking it in particular places. So it's important to look at all of the data and to notice the data and to keep checking what matches that data and what doesn't.
Yes, yeah, absolutely right. I mean, it, you know, some people talk about hard evidence. You're actually producing it. It seems to me that the foundation of a serious scientific investigation has to be the kinds of evidence that you and Morgan have displayed on your website.
And why would it upset people so much if it was nonsense?
I don't know, Judy, but, you know, it's stunning to me how from the time we had our interview on the 11th of November, my last interview on Republic Broadcasting Network, just talking about your website, which I really had just discovered and beginning to appreciate the depth of the destruction and the breadth of damage done and how it was increasingly improbable, even physically impossible, that any account that merely appealed to conventional demolitions of the Twin Towers could have brought about those effects, and thereby began endorsing, you know, recommending, encouraging, looking at a whole range of alternative possibilities in the area of non-conventional weaponry, including nukes, which might be atomic or hydrogen or maybe neutron, might be micro, some kind possibly of antimatter weaponry, lasers, masers, plasmoids. I mean, the explanation for this, which is a fantastic scientific challenge and the great one of the great murder mysteries of all time, has to lie in the direction of some kind of high-tech directed energy weapons.
I don't disagree.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today has been Judy Wood, a former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, and in my judgment, the leading scientific expert on the issues that are involved in understanding what happened at the World Trade Center in New York on 9/11. Judy, I've been very dismayed by reports I've heard. I didn't actually hear the program of conversations between Alex Jones and Steve Jones where they were congratulating each other on the success and Steve Jones has had in explaining what happened to the World Trade Center on the basis of his hypothesis that thermite and thermate were involved when, you know, there's really no foundation for such a claim. He wrote a paper that has been widely cited, but I think anyone who actually studies the issues realize it's more of a promissory note than it is really a scientific explanation. To my knowledge, the only patents we know about for this thermate stuff is that it can cut 2 inches of steel. The core foundation here, those support beams in the central columns, were 4 inches thick. Are we proposing that there were, you know, thermate charges, cutter charges on both sides in order to cut through the 4 inches? He hasn't given any demonstration that the claims he's made on behalf of his explanation are adequate or can be sustained.
Yeah, it is a little bit mind-boggling how one could think that, you know, you could cut every single column of every single floor, of every single level, but that still wouldn't do it.
I mean, look, there are 47 core columns and 240 external columns. That's 287 columns on every floor.
But did we see that many columns at the end of the day?
Is he proposing that these thermite charges were placed on all of those columns? I mean, you know, it verges on the bizarre, and I worry about Alex Jones. I owe Alex a lot. I'm a big fan of Alex Jones. He organized that American Scholar Symposium out in L.A. He's been a major force for good in relation to the 9/11 movement. But it seems to me he's been taken in. To the best of my knowledge, his scientific credentials are virtually non-existent. But I'm just worried that Alex can, you know, be a true believer without actually understanding what's going on here. He's been very critical on occasion of you and me and Morgan, Judy, and I just don't think Alex actually has the background to understand what's going on here.
I think it's important for us to look at the data. There's some pictures on the front page of my website.
Yeah.
There's four pictures, I believe, in a row, with the one on the far right, under where it says the dew weapon. There's a grayish kind of one where you're looking north, northeast at Building 7.
Should we go to Dr. Judy Wood, in other words?
Yes.
All right. Had a typo in my address.
And right below my picture is a picture it's on the far right, and it's a picture of Ground Zero on the afternoon of 9/11.
Yes, that's a fascinating photograph because look how it's leveled. You're so right, Judy. It's leveled. Those buildings were just leveled. And look in the background. You can see Building 7 standing in the midst of the smoke.
If we took that picture the day before from that position, you'd have a tower and a couple of things in front of you. You'd have Building 3.
Yeah.
On the right, you'd have Building 1 in front of you.
Yeah.
Here, it's ground level.
You know, as I look at these four photographs, I mean, I realize why you chose them. I mean, they're really excellent. You got the bubbler. You got a toasted car. You got that weird gouge out of Building 6.
That's an interesting one.
Complete devastation. Those are really excellent photographs to illustrate some of the problems with the not just the government's account, Judy, which I think is so ridiculous, no one can possibly take it seriously, but with accounts that try to explain this all on the basis of conventional demolitions.
You don't have the material left. Like that next to the last picture, you see the holes in Building 6?
Yeah.
They're empty holes.
That's right. They're empty holes. I know. It's fascinating. Where did all that material go?
And the remnants of Building 6, which is an eight-story building, tower over the remnants of Building 1. What's wrong with this picture? You know, 110-story building.
Tower over Building 1, and right behind it to the left is the remnant of Building 7.
Which is
there's an enormous pile there of Building 7. It must be 5-6 stories high, I would surmise, and yet there's nothing comparable for Building 1, even though it was more than twice as tall.
And if you click on that picture, you're taken to page 4, which shows the holes and various pictures around Ground Zero.
I'm there right now.
And I think I have some other pictures on page 6 that show a lack of debris, where you can look straight across from east to west across Ground Zero, and it's all ground level.
I just have to say, Judy, you know, to Alex Jones, Alex, I'm a huge fan of yours, but you got to take a look at the evidence. This is the hard evidence, Alex. It's not people who talk about hard evidence. It's people who actually deal in hard evidence. And Judy Wood is dealing in hard evidence. And if you don't want to put yourself in a position where you lose or jeopardize your credibility, my friend, you got to come to grips with the fact that thermite and thermate cannot explain the evidence, the hard evidence, the real evidence. Face up to it, my friend. There's a whole lot more going on here than some of your allies can possibly explain. Thermite, thermate can't cut it. And that's a deliberate, there's a pun there. Those are cutting charges, but they can't cut it. They can't explain what happened here, Alex. That's just a message and aside to of someone I consider to be a friend, Judy.
Okay. I'm concerned about the data and people looking at the data.
I know that's all you've ever focused on has been the data.
And if folks just look at it's amazing. I saw a forum where folks had just recently discovered the toasted cars. They said, "Oh my gosh, I've never seen these pictures before." They've been available for the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, and how long have we been talking about it on the air? I mean, I think the 11th of September was the first time we had a a real focus on your website.
And it's, you know, once someone looks at these pictures, it's hard to go anywhere else. It's hard to think of that it's anything conventional. The pictures from the satellite image where you see these round cylindrical cutouts of all the buildings.
Yeah.
And the cylindrical cutout in the street.
And then you get some of these preposterous arguments from some sources who are allied with Steve Jones, who want to argue that it's impossible to have enough energy to bring about these effects. Judy, what do you think about
it? Oh, that's pretty good humor, because if there wasn't enough energy for this to have happened, then it didn't happen. That means the buildings are still there.
I guess they must still be there.
Or there wasn't enough energy for a high-tech, high-efficiency, you know, gizmo to do it, but there was gravity is enough.
Low tech,
yeah.
a little jet. That jet fuel must be potent stuff, Judy. It looks like it can bring down anything. If it can bring down those 110-story buildings,
right,
so massively redundant that John Skilling, who was a senior partner in the engineering firm responsible for their construction, said could bear 2,000%, 20 times its expected maximum expected live load. That's amazing. That jet fuel stuff is really, really stunning. Must be the universal solvent we've been looking for.
Right. So if you go to an airport, gee, you should. You know, if it takes five times the world's amount of output of energy, which I think is probably zero, but according to this idea that it takes too much energy, well, then airplanes could bring it down. Then if you go to an airport and you have all those airplanes there, how many times the world's energy do you have?
I know. What's this idea? I mean, we got this oblate spheroid rotating in space, and of course, in orbit around the sun. How do you measure that, Judy? How do you measure that Earth's output of energy? I mean, for God's sake, a single atomic bomb could bring about results like this. That's got to be a minuscule, you know, quantity in relation to the Earth's energy resources.
Right. So
what's going on here? Why is deceit and deception? Why are people having to exaggerate and distort and not treat you and me and Morgan honestly? I mean, you know, they take sentences and they edit them.
They don't
invite people to look at the evidence. They give fake evidence in support of their position. I'm absolutely shocked. And they claim to be scientific?
Let's just tell folks to look at things for themselves. Look at the evidence if they want to know what happened.
I want to thank you, my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. I want to encourage everyone who wants to understand what's going on to visit her site again and again and again, drjudywood.com. It's been great having you on, Judy. We'll do it again. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. You've been listening to The Dynamic Duo.
Hello, I don't know.